Hello, this is Dave Jeffrey, welcoming you to the first edition of Optimal Life for 2020. In the studio with me today, our two readers, Virginia Collinge and Lynn Perrott. Firstly, Virginia, how are you today and welcome?
I'm very well, thanks, Dave.
And welcome to you, Lynn.
Welcome to you, David.
Now, something all our listeners want to know, I'm sure, any exciting New Year's activities, resolutions or anything like that? Lynn, what are you up to?
Well, I enjoyed the New Year's fireworks, I must say, on the ABC television.
They were good, weren't they?
And the countdown through the decades.
Yeah, you're in Newcastle. Did they have anything special up there?
They did, but I didn't take part in it.
No. And Virginia, I know you and I watched the same ones down here in Sydney. They were pretty good, weren't they?
They were amazing. But I have to admit, you know, there were a quarter of a million people who signed a petition saying we shouldn't have the fireworks.
That got a lot of publicity.
Well, I was one of that quarter.
Oh, were you? But they raised a couple of million dollars.
Well, I apologise for being a little bit misplaced, but really, as I said to a friend, it was just about making some kind of statement that everybody else has to stop with fire. Why should we have the fireworks? And I could hardly breathe in the smoky air, so I felt that I had to sort of make some kind of statement, so I did.
Tell you what, the air has been so bad, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Yes.
All right, let's get going with our first program for the year. A look at what's coming up. We've got affordable retirement living and something that I know I'm really looking forward to, pesky midlife weight crises, the Opal card and libraries changing for the better. All right, to get us going, it's over to you, Lynn.
Thank you, Dave. What's really behind pesky midlife weight creep? It's a common complaint that even gynaecologist Dr. Lauren Stryker has experienced. Here she explains why it's such an issue for women especially. The phrase I hear most often in my office from my 40 to 60-year-old patients is, "No matter what I do, I keep gaining weight," Dr. Stryker said. This midlife weight struggle is common, and it happened to me. I hit my late 40s and suddenly my consistent exercise routine and healthy diet weren't working. When the scale registered 5 kilograms over my ideal weight, I did what any sane person would do. I bought a new scale. But the numbers didn't lie, and neither did the big new lump round my middle. And in spite of my doing all the things I'd been telling my patients to do, avoid soft drinks, count kilojoules, watch portion sizes, eliminate bread, etc., the new scale was stuck. The fact is, midlife women gain, on average, 0.5 kilo per year. It picks up when they hit menopause. 90% of women gain at least 2 kilos within a year of hitting that milestone. While that doesn't seem like a lot, if you gain that each year starting at age 45, by 55 you're looking at as many as 7 to 10 extra kilos. Sometimes midlife weight gain can be attributed to eating out more, a nightly glass of wine with dinner, or occasionally an underactive thyroid. More often than not, though, changes in two key hormones are the culprit. Midlife is hardly a zen-like time, with many stressful events happening, from trying to find kids' school fees, aging parents, and possibly a big life change such as death or divorce. Then add in menopausal hot flushes and insomnia. Yikes! All that cortisol increases your appetite and cravings for sugar, and yup, brings on weight gain and an accumulation of abdominal fat cells. This typically starts in the mid to late 40s and doesn't change metabolism, but it does explain why you might have a new muffin top, even if you haven't gained a pound. But a fall in estrogen indirectly affects weight gain for one important reason. It has a strong impact on the ability to get a decent night's sleep. Disrupted sleep is about more than hot flushes. Even women who aren't woken up by these heat waves may end up tossing and turning. The metabolic changes that result from inadequate sleep are, more than anything else, what sabotage midlife efforts to lose weight. It leads to changes in weight regulation hormones. Disrupted sleep causes ghrelin, the hunger hormone, to increase, and leptin, the stop-eating hormone, to decrease. Ghrelin doesn't just increase your appetite, it makes you crave high-carb, high-kilojoule foods. Increased ghrelin plus decreased leptin equals weight gain. Also, when you're exhausted, pizza is much more appealing than steamed veggies, and exercise is less enticing than what's on Netflix. A recent study showed even one night of sleep loss can have a negative impact on metabolism. When a woman comes into my practice for menopause and her number one complaint is weight gain, our first question is not, what are you eating, but rather, are you sleeping? The bottom line, making getting a good night's rest a priority. In case you're wondering, when I made some life changes to decrease stress and started sleeping again, I lost the extra weight and I've learned to embrace my muffin top. And that article was about the midlife and beyond weight creep from the April-May 2019 Prevention magazine.
Wow, I think I'll have to start getting more sleep and worry about my metabolism.
No, but there's an easy answer. Just get a different set of scales.
Oh, that's right. Throw out the scales. Well, let's stay with the food idea. And this is also from April, but this is on the ABC landline. It's co-founder of Sydney Butchery Empire says Australians should eat less meat. One of the nation's biggest meat wholesalers believes Australians eat too much meat and should focus more on quality than quantity. Anthony Pohajic is co-founder of Vic's Meat, which supplies high-end restaurants and five-star hotels across Australia. In a book entitled Meat, the Ultimate Companion, Mr. Pohajic has courted controversy with a plea for the meat industry to be more aware of its environmental footprint and social license. We're one of the biggest contributors as an industry to global greenhouse gas emissions and methane production, Mr. Pohajic said. We use a lot of the finite resources that go into meat production, being water and petroleum. It's not about pointing the finger, it's about taking more responsibility, and I think eating less meat, but eating better quality meat, meat that's of a higher nutritional value, can only be a good thing. When researching his book, he said he was shocked to learn that Australians now eat about 100 kilograms of protein per capita per year, third only behind the United States and Kuwait. When you break that down, it's like 2 kilograms of meat per week that we're all consuming, he said. It's a lot, and I'm sure that'll shock a lot of people. Obviously, the infrastructure, the resources that have to go into producing that amount of meat is having an impact on the environment. He said farmers could not be blamed for supplying a market demanding cheap meat, but consumers should be aware that value was more than just about price. It seems we are programmed to keep churning out meat for the sake of churning out meat, and I question the nutritional value of some of that protein that's being produced and potentially the health effects it might be having, he said. The health effects of just consuming that quantity of protein can't be good for you, so once again it's about striking that balance. He gave up a career in merchant banking to join his father Vic in the meat trade more than 20 years ago. They started with a small butcher shop in Sydney's Darlinghurst and now have wholesale and retail outlets in 3 states with 180 employees. He said he was passionate about the industry, and while he does not have answers to all of its problems, he hoped that his book would spark worthwhile debate. Mr. Pohajic said writing the book gave him a chance to promote his 3 guiding principles for a more sustainable meat industry and healthier consumption habits. Besides eating better quality meat and less of it, consumers needed to eat more of the animals raised for slaughter, not just the 12% that make up premium cuts. Eating more wild animals, such as kangaroos, would help move away from an over-reliance on beef, chicken, pork and lamb. He said there were 60 million kangaroos in Australia that had a minimal carbon footprint and were perfectly adapted to Australia's climate. They sustain themselves on their annual natural environment, native bushes and grasses. They're lean, they're healthy, they're high in trace minerals that don't exist in other sorts of protein, he said. They are now significantly more inexpensive than beef and lamb, and I don't get why we don't eat more of it. He said a predicted global population of 9 billion by 2050 would mean greater demand for protein, but he believed plant-based meat alternatives and especially laboratory-grown meat could threaten the traditional meat industry. I don't want the meat industry to be the Nokia or Kodak example of what happens when you don't worry about what potential trends might be happening. When you've got the likes of Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and Richard Branson investing millions and tens of millions of dollars in this alternative source of meat, it's something to be very concerned about. He said despite his clarion call for action, he was confident Australia's meat industry could meet any future challenges. His own company will open a butcher shop in New York later this year, modelled on its Victor Churchill concept of Sydney's eastern suburbs, which is possibly the most expensive, extravagant outlet of its kind in the world. And that was from the ABC's Landline in April of last year.
You're listening to the New Year edition of Optimal Life.
The next article is entitled Navigators Rolled Out, and it's from the Newcastle Herald Summer 2019 Special Magazine. Older Australians can get free help navigating the complex aged care system thanks to the rollout of a $7.4 million national trial. The Aged Care System Navigator Initiative offers face-to-face, phone and online assistance to seniors and their families in every state and territory, including selected rural and remote areas. The scheme includes three trial programs which aim to help older people trying to learn more about government-supported aged care programs and how to access them. These could be people accessing aged care for the first time or transitioning between the Commonwealth Home Support Program, home care packages, and/or residential aged care. The three programs include 32 aged care information hubs, 21 community hubs, and 9 specialist support workers who will offer one-on-one support, either in person or over the phone, for vulnerable people. The trial, funded by the government, will be delivered by a consortium of 30 consumer-focused organisations led by COTA, the Council on the Ageing Australia. Minister for Senior Australians and Aged Care, Ken Wyatt, said the navigators will target seniors in need, especially those facing language or other difficulties. The navigator system is critical to ensuring senior Australians have more choices for longer and better lives, he said. COTA Chief Executive Ian Yates said there was an urgent need to invest in navigators in the aged care system. The great thing about these trials is that they steer away from the cookie-cutter approach to accessing aged care and recognise the importance of tailoring support to access aged care services to different situations and contexts, he said. A 90-year-old in the top end of Australia is going to have very different access support needs to a 70-year-old in inner-city Melbourne. The Older Persons Advocacy Network has also been involved with the trial and said it was important for people entering aged care. My aged care is full of answers, but we are told it is difficult to find them, said Network Chief Executive Craig Gear. The pilot is funded until the end of June 2020.
Well, COTA have a lot of very interesting things, and the next article is taken from the COTA December 2019 newsletter. COTA ask for people to tell them about how they feel about retirement, and this one is from Ross Hughes. Ross Hughes is not retired. He is the curator of his own life. Here he tells us how he's living the life post-paid work. Not in the paid workforce, curator of my own life and domestic management consultant, that's DMC, are all euphemisms for my version of the R word, retirement. call it vanity if you will, but I reject the R word completely, as it conjures up images of oldies in slippers at home watching afternoon TV and all of those disturbing advertisements for funeral plans. I don't see my life that way, even remotely. I was reluctant to leave the paid workforce when my last part-time contract ended almost 2 years ago. Now I am almost 68 and I feel my life is full with a range of stimulating activities, some of which I had resolved to but never had time to undertake while in the paid workforce. This includes more exercise, social activities, engagement in arts and volunteering to give back to individuals and organisations. How do I feel about my life? I feel surprisingly content and in control of my life. I could grumble about the invisibility of older people, various health ailments, and the relative frugality of fixed income compared to my salaried days. I feel like I ameliorate these with my capacity to fill up space socially, or being loud and proud, engaging positively with people socially and professionally, caring less about how others see me, and a commitment to a 5-minute limit on health grumbles. I refer to these conversations as organ recitals. One has to keep reminding oneself and others that there's an alternative to continuing living, but I'm certainly not ready for that yet. And that was from Ross Hughes in the December 2019 newsletter of COTA New South Wales.
Virginia, thank you for that. Very, very interesting. This is Optimal Life, first one for 2020 on the RPH Network.
The next article is entitled Affordable Retirement Living from the Newcastle Herald Summer 2019 Special Edition. Looking to downsize? An innovative solution could help you save up to $100,000 upfront on your new home. The main reason homes are more affordable in lifestyle villages rather than traditional retirement villages is that ownership of the land and home are separate. Although you own your home, you rent rather than buy the land. Also, there is no stamp duty, expensive legal fees, or ongoing council rates to pay, and pensioners are eligible for government-funded rent assistance. However, if you are still concerned about having sufficient funds to enjoy a comfortable retirement and to tick off some of the things on your bucket list, you can take advantage of Hampshire Village's unique shared equity facility, which is available for new homes purchased at Bayway Village in Fern Bay, Banksia Grove Village in Williamtown, and Crystal Waters Estate in Huntcurry. Rather than paying the full price on settlement, you can pay from 75% of the purchase price in return for the same percentage ownership. Using shared equity frees up capital that would otherwise be tied up in your home, allowing you to spend it or invest it as you choose. Although ownership of the home is shared between you and the village, naturally you have exclusive use of the home and the right to sell your home when you wish. Shared equity is a fantastic option for anyone wanting to secure a new home and lifestyle for a fraction of the cost and without having to break the bank. It has put more money in our pockets, selling our family home and buying here, Bayway Village Fern Bay residents Karen and Paul Jansen said. We thought about buying another property, but buying a home within Bayway freed up so much extra cash, which has enabled us to travel and really enjoy our retirement. Plus, there are all these other benefits that come from living within a lifestyle community. New friendships, fantastic facilities, and a busy calendar of activities and events. The list goes on. We couldn't be happier. Sue and Alan D. agree. The best move we have ever made was moving here. We came here to live our life, and we are enjoying our lifestyle very much. It can be a bit daunting leaving your family home, but once you do it, you will love it.
This is information that I think we all need to know. It's from the COTA New South Wales December 2019 newsletter, and it's called Opal Card Issues for Pensioner Travellers. It appears that pensioners who travel overseas for more than 6 weeks are at risk of having their gold opal card for travelling New South Wales public transport cancelled while they're away. COTA New South Wales had a call from a gentleman who had notified the Department of Human Services that he would be away for 3 months, as he is obliged to do. While away, he received a communication that his opal card had been cancelled. He rang and asked if he could be reinstated, as he wanted to use it to travel home from the airport when he returned, but was told that this was not possible, as his pensioner concession card had been cancelled by Human Services. Human Services do say on their website that this will occur, but it is not made clear that all related concessions may also be cancelled. The caller found, after he got back, that his driver's licence and car registration concessions had also been cancelled. He was able to have the concessions reinstated immediately, but it could have been a problem if his licence or registration had been due while he was away. He was also able to get a new gold opal card once he'd obtained a new pensioner concession card. A spokesperson for the Department of Human Services said that state, local and private concessions offered with the pensioner concession card are at the discretion of the individual provider. If you notify the department online when you go overseas for more than 6 weeks, you will receive tailored information about how your payments and concession cards may be affected. However, this will not specify how related state concessions may be affected. They recommend that you check with your concession provider. A spokesperson for Transport for New South Wales confirmed that your gold opal card will be cancelled if they receive advice from Centrelink that you are no longer eligible for a concession card. If you have elected to receive notifications, you will be notified of this in advance. They pointed out that the seniors card can also be used to obtain a gold opal card, and it's not impacted by overseas travel as long as you remain a permanent resident of New South Wales.
Knitting for Good. Meet the knitting group lending its skills to a range of charities for people and animals in need by Beth Wallace. On any given day, the gentle clicking of knitting needles can be heard throughout Morven Manor, a retirement community in Mornington, Victoria. Here, a small group of residents known as the Morven Manor Knitters are putting their artistic skills to good use, creating, among other things, jumpers for penguins. It's a sweet image, but one that has come about through unfortunate circumstances. In the late 1990s to early 2000s, a series of oil spills injured the population of little penguins living on Phillip Island, south of Melbourne. With their feathers damaged, the penguins were left vulnerable to the cold and were no longer able to swim or hunt for food. Using their beaks to remove the toxic oil could have killed them. Rescuers at the Phillip Island Wildlife Clinic found that dressing injured penguins in specially knitted jumpers kept them warm during rehabilitation. The jumpers also prevented the penguins preening their oily feathers. The garments proved so successful that following the most recent major oil spill near Phillip Island, 96% of the 438 affected penguins survived. And so, the Knits for Nature program was born, with tens of thousands of little knits arriving from around the world to build a stockpile of jumpers in preparation for future oil spills. The Morven Manor Knitters are among those who have continued to answer the penguins' call to arms. Yet, as member Di Hunter points out, this wasn't the group's original purpose. We started 18 months ago to form a social connection, to get residents together and do some craft, she says. I'd been knitting scarves and beanies for charities for years, and three or four other people were quite interested in doing the same. It wasn't long before Di came across an appeal put out by Marie Knight, a farmer from Coonabarabran in central New South Wales, asking knitters to make jumpers for newborn lambs, often due to the effects of drought. Everybody was keen to get involved, and we had fun with the lamb jumpers, says Di. Then I heard about the penguin rehabilitation jumpers, so we went for that. It's created a lot of interest around our village and has brought people out of themselves, talking about all these odd things. While the group members do most of their knitting in their homes, they also meet twice a month for social get-togethers. It's really just people chatting and catching up with each other over afternoon tea, says Di. But we also have a table out with the items we've knitted, like show and tell, so we can see what everybody is working on. The gatherings aren't just for the knitters, with up to 15 residents attending the fortnightly events. There was quite a bit of interest earlier this year when a raffle was held to raise funds for materials to create fiddle mats, sensory blankets that provide a soothing activity for people living with dementia or recovering from strokes. We work furry wool into the patterns, and as they stroke it, it reminds them of pets they have lost and may provide comfort, Di says. Generally, we work in laces and ribbons and beads, which activates and stimulates their senses. Groups who look after young children with disabilities are showing interest in our work too. Numerous charities have welcomed their donations as well. The Morven Manor Knitters have contributed goods to COGO, the Knit One, Give One not-for-profit organisation that distributes handcrafted winter garments to people in need. It is rewarding to know your creations are appreciated by those in our community, Di says. Everybody needs a little bit of help in their lives, so we knit as much as we can. And that concerned a knitting group lending its skills to people and animals in need from the Flourish magazine of 2019.
Well, thank you very much, ladies. That's about all we've got time for in our first edition for 2020.
Well, I think it's been a great edition.
Yes, and Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy New Year to all.
You have been listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network.